Yeah, he's had a pretty good week. I wouldn't say he didn't have all three like that today, but today he had a really good day and was just making some incredible catches.
That's great hands. Wins in man coverage. He's a strider. He's a guy who can create first off, first press. Man, he really doesn't drive nothing. So just got to continue to find ways to get him involved early, get him the ball, to continue working on our timing.
I mean, he comes into work. He's like a pro. He does everything that you want him to do. And he's just willing to be coachable and soak up all the knowledge that he's getting. I'm just really glad that he's here with us.
He'll have an explosive year just because he'll get a lot of one-on-one matchups, and that's what we want. We want guys to come down and play man because we think we can beat them.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me, as always, the managing editor of Titan-Sized, publisher of NFL Draft on SI, the Yada Yada King, my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, I was saving Yada Yada. I don't think I've said it since Monday. I was doing that on purpose, saving it for the live show. We are live, recapping Titans OTAs, the first OTA practice that was open to the media, their third overall OTA practice out of 10 as we build up towards the mandatory minicamp. Justin, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, doing well. You sure know how to set a stage, saving the Yada Yada King for Friday's live show. Our first Friday live show in a couple of weeks. We had to battle through the adversity of Graver getting married, but we are back here with the Friday live stream, as promised, right on time, 10:30 a.m. Central. And you can't convince me the Titans aren't fans of this podcast, because for them to save the first open OTA practice for Thursday, the day before the MCA live stream, kudos to them. Tip of the cap to all who were involved in that scheduling. It sounded like a real fiery, exciting, fun, electric practice, and we're here to talk about it today.
Yeah, I mean, the headline coming out of this OTA practice was Carnell Tate, superstar. And that's not an exaggeration. Now, it's an overreaction to one OTA practice. We didn't even see what happened the rest of this week, right? We have no idea if he was great or terrible the other two practice days. Wandale Robinson did talk about that, said that he's actually had a great week. Yeah, that was the first clip of the intro there where he says he hasn't played, he hasn't had three every day like he did today. He's talking about touchdown catches because Carnell Tate had three of those in Thursday's open OTA session. But I mean, I think Austin Stanley put it really well of A to Z Sports in a little selfie video he made after practice. He said, if you compare the first time we get to see Carnell Tate practicing with the veterans to, say, a previous first-round wide receiver and the first time we got to see him practicing with the Titans, Treylon Burks, who was an abject disaster in his first OTA practice. Remember, he showed up out of shape. He was just downright bad and disappointing for a first-round pick. He said, compared to that, Carnell Tate's going to the Hall of Fame. Now, again, extreme overreaction on purpose. But the point is, this is what you want to see. This doesn't mean Carnell Tate's going to be the rookie of the year and have 1,500 yards and be a wide receiver one and the guy that we all hope and expect he can be. But it does mean he's taking the right step. He's gotten off on the right foot. A great first impression for Titans fans and the media who are out there. I can't tell you how thrilled I am to see these reports and some of the clips that we're going to play in a little bit from practice of Carnell Tate absolutely dominating the wide receiver reps and being Cam Ward's favorite target already.
Yeah, if you read Jim Wyatt's observations article from that third OTA practice, the one open to the media, not only did he have a would-be three touchdown catches that it certainly made its rounds on Twitter, but he also had a, I guess what Jim Wyatt called a team-high six catches, right? So he was getting involved time and time again, showcasing those strong hands. Wyatt noted that. Remember, he had zero drops in college last season at Ohio State. Talked about meeting defensive backs at the catch point and just kind of overwhelming them with his hands. Cam Ward's go-to weapon, I would say, in the practice. Short, intermediate, long. I believe one of the touchdown catches was like a play-action 50-yard bomb. Everything you want to see out of a first-round receiver at his third ever OTA practice. I mean, it really sounds like he sort of took the field by storm, if you will.
Yeah. Now, let's stick a pin in it. We're going to talk more about Carnell Tate, what he did, what it means for the future of this team and for this offense this season. But Justin, there's a lot that happened at this practice. We're going to recap. Robert Saleh spoke. Four total players spoke. Cam Ward, Wandale Robinson, Peter Skoronski, and Imani Hooker all had things to say. We're going to react to some of those quotes and some of the other practice notes from this day, from this session. Other guys who stood out, guys who weren't there. Quickly, Justin, I want to do this because I want to do this the right way. I want our show to do things the right way and acknowledge the fact that you and I are not at, we're not in Nashville. We are not at these open OTA practices. We are relaying reports that we've read, clips that we've seen, and I'll be honest with you, I read 5 Titans practice recap notes so that I could have the full picture of what happened out there, and that doesn't include Twitter threads of recap notes, but shout out to guys like Teron Davenport, Nick Suss, Easton Freeze, Austin Stanley, Buck Rising of A to Z Sports, Paul Kaharski, even Jared Stillman was out there and was very impressed by Carnell Tate.
Jim Wyatt, of course.
Jim Wyatt, of course. So and if I didn't name you, I apologize. Ben Arthur was out there, but all the guys in the local market who take the time to go to these practices, to write up these notes, share them so that we can react to them, and so that you and I have something to analyze, because again, we're not sharing our own observations, we're sharing our analysis of other people's observations, but we couldn't do it without them. We'd have no show, basically, if it wasn't for the people out there on the beat putting in the work. So appreciate everyone in the local market, in the local media, doing the job so that we can do our job, which is different. We're not real, again, we're analyzing, we're not observing, but we will pass on all those observations. So I wanted to start with the absences, people who were not at camp, or not camp, OTA practice. Remember, these are not mandatory periods. There are guys who are rehabbing. This is their third practice of the week. So there are guys who practiced earlier in the week who, for whatever maintenance or just making sure that their bodies don't get overworked early on, were not at practice. And the list includes, may not be limited to, but definitely includes Jeffrey Simmons, John Franklin Myers, Cordell Flott, Calvin Ridley, Dan Moore Jr., Femi Oladejo, Elik Iyemanner, Chimere Dike, Jermaine Johnson, Joey Sly, Jordan Elliott, and Nick Singleton. We know some of those guys were injured and working back from injuries. Nick Singleton with the foot thing. Femi Oladejo coming off a serious season-ending injury last year. Jeffrey Simmons has spoken about wanting to get his routine in the way that he knows what's best for his body. And I fully support this, by the way. I'm not going to be wringing my hands over Jeffrey Simmons not being there. Well, again, he was on that CBS Sports interview sit-down thing. He talked about this, how he felt like last year was his best year. He feels like he's really locked in his off-season routine. He was there when Robert Saleh and the veterans first reported for spring stuff so that he could get to meet the new coach, so that he could be there, be around the young guys and around the team. But now he's doing his thing where he's going back to do his workouts in Dallas, which I totally respect that. And he'll be back for mandatory minicamp. I have no worries at all. And then you talk about, you know, the day Carnell Tate had. Well, Calvin Ridley, Elik Iyemanner, and Chimere Dike all not practicing. So maybe that helps Carnell Tate stand out a little bit more because, you know, if the other three guys are three of your top five receivers, Cam Ward's looking at Tate and Wandale and then backups, you know. So he did throw passes to Lance McCutcheon and Bryce Oliver, but regardless, that can help explain maybe why Tate was so dominant. And so that's the group that didn't practice. Again, nothing really to take away from it, but just thought I would share some context there about guys who weren't on the field.
Yeah, I mean, not super worried about it. Like you said, these are voluntary. They're not mandatory. You got a mixture of guys who are deciding to stay away for the betterment of their own routine. And then you've got a mixture of guys who are dealing with, you know, coming back from injuries, like you mentioned, like the Femi Oladejos or rookie running back Nick Singleton. Before we move on to the next topic, do you want to hit some of these super chat tips or do you want to save them for later? We got a bunch of them.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's hit some of these chats. You want to fly them up?
First off, we got Walmart Man 31 here.
Oh my goodness gracious.
With the $1.99 super chat tip, we are live to discuss the domitating. Very nice wordplay there with Carnell Tate. Thank you so much, Walmart Man 31. An angry fetus with the $5 super chat tip. Very nice of him, but also living up to the angry part of his name with his comment by saying, I've had Carnell Tate for 1 month, but if anything happened to him, I'd unalive everyone in this room and then myself. Angry fetus, please don't do that. You let us know. If anything happens to Carnell Tate, we are going to call the local authorities wherever you live. But we appreciate the generous super chat tip. Thank you so much. Gary Soto, the man, back from walking Justin Graver down the aisle at his wedding in Texas. And he's back with the super chat tip. $49.99. Hit the thing for Gary Soto.
Oh my goodness gracious.
We are back, says Gary Soto. Yes, we are. And some noted in the comment that it's 1 cent off his usual $50 tip. And he said, hey, times are tough. It's a recession out here. Gary, we appreciate you coming through with the generosity as always. And we hope you had a good time at Graver's wedding. Here we go. And one more here, Stingray VFL with the 499. Glad y'all are back. Life makes sense again. Stingray, we came back to add the joy back to your life. So thank you so much. We're glad you're happy again. And thank you so much for the generous super chat tip. And another one just came in, Graver. Hit the thing. I was not prepared for it. Gracious. This is a fresh one from Lem Doss with the super generous wow. $49.99 tip. Matching Gary Soto, going toe-to-toe with the legend Soto himself. Lem Doss says, congrats on your marriage, Graver. Get yourself a nice toaster with two laughing faces. And you know what? With that super chat tip, Graver can go get himself a one of those with the fancy settings. You know, you got to be able to control how toasty your bread is. Thank you so much, Lem Doss, for the generosity.
We did get a toaster. We got a really nice Smeg toaster that ooh. It's the Smeg variety. Oh, yeah. So that was fun. But yeah, we appreciate all these super chat tips, Justin. I want to talk about our next topic here as we fly through the recap of this practice. Appreciate everybody out there. I mean, that's just too kind. But I want to move on and talk about some of Robert Saleh's quotes, because Robert Saleh said some things that were interesting. He said some things that were inflammatory, especially like online. And he said some things that don't really matter at all. But number one, first and foremost, biggest thing I thought he said that is very encouraging. We talked about this, I think, on Tuesday's show. Cam Ward's perfectly healthy. Those are the words he used. Perfectly healthy. He's out there slinging the ball. He's throwing it with velocity. I didn't cut this clip because it's pretty straightforward. He just basically said Cam Ward is fine. Cam Ward was asked about the injury too. It's like, you know, is it behind you? We'll get to that when we get to Cam Ward updates. Robert Saleh says Cam Ward is perfectly healthy. You love to hear that from the head coach. You love to hear that about your team's starting quarterback. And that is where we will begin Saleh's quotes as we run through the stuff that he said, Justin. You don't have anything?
Sorry, I thought you were going to play the clip. I apologize.
I said I don't have the clip of that one.
I misread the vibe in the room, like Ron Burgundy once said. Yeah, you love to hear it, right? You love this, you know, I think from the clips that we've seen, probably been able to gather that Cam Ward is fairly healthy, right? It looks like he's ripping that ball. I think you and I talked about it earlier this week. Velocity on the arm looks good. He's finned the ball in the tight windows. Perfectly healthy is what you want to hear. Remember, the sky was falling in week 18 when he got hurt. And well, how long is this shoulder injury? We all did a bunch of research, and if he gets surgery, it's, you know, better, but he's going to be out longer. If he doesn't get surgery, he'll come back quicker, but it feels dangerous. By all accounts and purposes, Cam Ward, as we quote Bobby Salsa, is fully healthy. Love to hear that he's fully healthy, and he's ripping it at OTAs, voluntary workouts, practice sessions. He is there. Excited about that. Probably can move on from it. Good to know.
Yeah, so that was the first thing I wanted to talk about. The second thing, the thing that was inflammatory, and now this to me is like, are you kidding? I guess this is May covering the NFL. Robert Saleh was asked, you know, have you made any changes to the practice flow out there? And he goes, you know what? It's OTAs. You probably won't see any changes yet. Once you get to training camp, you'll see some changes. And I think, I want to say it was Paul Kaharsky, but I can't remember. Follows up with, any other changes or anything else? What about the diet? What about nutrition? And he goes, well, you know what? Yes, one of the first things we did was we removed all seed oils from the building. And the players really appreciate that. He went on to talk about how he went to Amy and asked for a bigger budget for the cafeteria to give them more food options, and that everybody's really happy, and that the nutrition staff he's working with is maybe the best he's ever worked with in 6 years. And now the internet took the removing seed oils thing and went bonkers with it, Justin. Apparently, I didn't know this. I'm not really into like health and fitness online forums and all that, but apparently there are two very passionate competing factions of people. One who believe that seed oils cause inflammation and are tremendously unhealthy for you and shouldn't be part of your diet if you're trying to maximize your physical abilities. A whole other subset of people who say, that's nonsense. You're falling for dumb TikTok videos and stupid trends. Seed oils are perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with them. And so, Justin, I think this whole thing is stupid, first of all. I did some research, though, because I had to know, like, what is the objective, honest, unbiased thing that is happening here? And it does seem that the most recent studies indicate, now this is all still sort of conjecture, because what do we don't really know anything about the world that we pretend to know as science and all that, whatever.
I'm probably going to stop you at some point, but go. I know what you're probably about to say, but...
So the most recent research indicates that seed oils probably do not cause inflammation. Now, the real benefit to getting all seed oils out of the building is that most processed foods, which are bad for you for other reasons beyond seed oil, but right. most of those processed foods contain seed oil. So by removing seed oil from the building for potentially the wrong reasons, Robert Saleh has done a really good thing for the players by getting the processed food out of the building. So while he may be falling for bad science here, or just not be completely up to date or informed, I think the end result is a good thing for the team and for the health of the players. Amani Hooker said that he feels like he feels less sluggish or whatever, which is probably a placebo or just a byproduct of not eating processed foods. Again, the actual harmful effects of seed oil, maybe there aren't any. I don't know. Not a doctor.
Fast food places make fries with like canola oil and veggie oil. We know those things aren't great probably, but I also think that, like, I don't want to get into it, but I do think that side of people tend to be pretty stupid and crazy, in all honesty. I guess I'm just gonna flat out say, like, the whole Robert F. Kennedys of the world kind of thing. It's like, I think that side of it's a little strange for me, but this thing went viral. Didn't deserve to go as viral as it did, but it was also, I think most people, like, you know, Benjamin Sola, a bunch of people who were tweeting about it, I think they saw it as like a fun, stupid thing to laugh at on social media. It grew legs of its own for sure.
I agree that it was a fun thing to laugh at in May, but it was also an opportunity for people who cover the league to dunk on Robert Saleh and the Titans. That's how it was used.
There were like old online Jets fans who were like, this is why I hate Robert Saleh. And I'm like, okay, sure.
And there's people who are like, oh, cool, you're taking seed oil off the field. How about providing a schematic advantage on the field? And it's like, you know, Robert Saleh is one of the best, like, defensive schemers.
Anyway,
this is not going to take away. Anyway, it's all crazy. It's all ridiculous. But it was an extremely viral topic, and we had to touch on it from that standpoint, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But moving on.
Let's move on, Justin. Let's talk about another thing Robert Saleh said, and this will be the first clip I play. Talked about Jackson Slater. And we'll come back to this again in a bit, because I think we can put put some pieces together here, Justin. I know who will be starting at 4/5 of the offensive line. I already know. And put a pin in that. We'll come back to it. One of the reasons for that is that Robert Saleh was asked about Jackson Slater, how he's coming along, where he's competing, right guard, center. And here is what Robert Saleh had to say about that.
We're allowing him to work into that competition with regards to that right guard spot, but he's also got the flexibility, and we're kind of helping him along with regards to center too, but we're going to give him every opportunity to win that right guard spot.
So he is competing pretty much for the right guard spot, maybe working at center a little bit. The reason he's not working in as much at center, again, we'll come back to it, the Titans have their starting center. That's a tease. Jackson Slater, I do expect, will win the right guard battle, but he is very, very clearly battling with Cordell Volson. I don't think either rookie is in the mix right now. Maybe come training camp, they'll, you know, be caught up.
Agreed.
Another thing that was talked about a lot by all the players and by Robert Saleh is that they have already installed most of the offense and defense. Like, before the rookies integrated with the veterans at practice, they had already installed the majority of the playbook. Now, they installed the playbook 3 times. Once during OTAs, they install it again in mandatory minicamp, and they install it again in training camp. So by the time we get to mandatory minicamp, the rookies are going to be very far behind. At the end of mandatory minicamp, the rookies will have had a full installation. They'll be able to catch up a little bit, but they'll still be one installation behind the rest of the team. By training camp, you hope that kind of goes away, that the third time you're hearing it as a veteran is like, okay, I know it like the back of my hand now. The rookies, you know, it's going to take them longer to pick up stuff because they never picked up an NFL offense before. So I don't even think Pat Coogan and Fernando Carmona are in the mix in any way, shape, or form for a starting job. But I do think the right guard battle is coming down to Jackson Slater versus Cordell Volson. And you heard Robert Saleh talk about Slater pretty much working solely at right guard.
I fully agree. I think I said this before, but it always felt silly to assume or expect 5th and 6th round rookies to really, really compete for starting jobs right away. I mean, we'd be blown away in a good way. If that happens, wow, they're like blowing everyone away at training camp. I don't expect that to happen for fifth and sixth round picks. This Robert Saleh quote, I know like everyone went crazy about the Carnell Tate thing, like how good he was, and I get it. It's funny, maybe I'm too much of a nerd. Like the first story I wrote off of what happened Thursday was that clip, was the quote from that clip. Because to me, most interesting thing is the interior offensive line battle. It's one of the most important things because it's, you know, we don't have a lot of confidence in what's going on there. We worry it could derail the offense. I want to learn about that. That was number one on my priority list personally. So I went and I wrote the story immediately when he said that. It's going to be Jaxon Slater versus Cordell Volson at right guard. I hope and expect Jaxon Slater to win that job. If he doesn't, it's probably a bad sign. I think the way the Titans are looking at this, in all honesty, and of course they would never admit this openly, my analysis is we've got a young sophomore player who's obviously not played a lot of football. We want him to grow, develop, and ascend, and we want him to win that job. But he has to win it. He has to earn it. We're not handing it to him. If he fails to impress or fails to win that job, we've got a below average veteran who has started 50 career games at that position who we know can do it if the sophomore doesn't step up to the plate and earn it over him. Jaxon Slater versus Cordell Volson. I think they want Jaxon Slater to win it. But hey, worst case scenario, backs up against the wall. We got a 50-game starter that can play it if Slater doesn't show that he can.
Yeah, and I think that that is where they're going, and I think that's why, again, they haven't re-signed Kevin Zeitler, is they want to see these guys when the pads come on. Saleh talked about how hard it is to evaluate the offensive line in the modern era where you don't get any padded practices. He said, you know, when I started coaching 10, 15, whatever, we had these practices, even though we couldn't wear pads in OTAs, these were violent physical practices. Nowadays, during these practices, we're going at like three-quarter speed. You can't really get a lot of sense of any of these this stuff in OTAs, but we will have joint practices where we'll get a really good sense of it. We'll have three preseason games where we'll get a really good sense of it. And this is the last thing I have from Saleh. If you have anything, feel free to share after this. Saleh said the starters will play in all three preseason games. Give it to me. I love it.
Yeah, he did say I reserve the right to change my mind on that one. But
fair.
The one thing, the other thing that he said that I thought was funny, because coaches rarely get that honest, like, what does he really think of OTAs? He said no one's ever made a 53-man roster because of OTAs, right? It's like, it's true. Like, he goes, once those pads come on, it's a totally different ballgame. A guy who looked great disappears, and a guy who did very little for us shows up big because – it's all about physicality in football, and you can't really gauge that until the pads come on. But thought it was a good Robert Saleh presser. Everyone went crazy over the cafeteria stuff. But my biggest takeaway was the Jaxon Slater right guard quote.
He also talked about Femi Oladejo and where he's at in his development. We will save that for next week. We're going to do a whole episode on Femi because I want to talk again about Javon Kearse coming in to apparently mentor him. We're going to save that for, you know, a whole Femi-focused episode sometime next week, Justin. I think we should move on here and talk about, you know, the Cam Ward updates of this. But let's take a quick break for our audio audience, and we will be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Welcome back, audio audience. Justin, we roll on here talking about Cam Ward now. Cam Ward spoke after practice, and talked a lot about where he's at. I think obviously the health was a big question mark, and I think we've sort of had that answered just from clips and stuff, but to hear it literally answered by Robert Saleh, Cam Ward asked about it as well. They asked him, do you feel the injury is totally behind you? And he said, I feel it's behind me, but I also have it in mind because I don't want it to happen again, basically, is what he said. So he's working to continue to strengthen his shoulder, both shoulders, but the muscle that was injured for sure, and put this behind him. And I think a big part of avoiding injury, Justin, something that Cam Ward is going to be focused on, is he wants to be in better shape. And I thought this was the most interesting thing that came out of Cam Ward speaking, aside from the stuff he said about Carnell Tate, which I played, obviously, at the top of the show. Here is what Cam Ward, he was asked, I think he had to answer four separate questions about it, because it came up from Paul Kaharsky, and I've stitched all four answers into one clip.
You look slimmer. Are you in a different kind of shape than you were this time last year?
I am. I'm trying to get a little bit leaner. Then just trying to stay, you know, durable for a long season. It's really just watching the calorie limit, then watching the amount of protein and carbs that I need to put in, then what's best for, you know, my body, how I feel, you know, eating different things when I come to practice.
How much weight you estimate you lost?
Right now, probably about 10. I just think it'll help me with durability, being faster, getting up in the pocket, then just trying to play to my speed, not no one else's speed.
So he lost 10 pounds, changed up his diet, counting the calories, making sure he gets enough protein, all the things that you love to see from a guy really taking this seriously. There were some criticisms of Cam's body coming out of last season, pictures of him where he just didn't look totally defined. Like, he didn't necessarily look like a pro athlete. Now, at the quarterback position, I think you can get away with it. We saw the Tom Brady pictures from when he was young, and, you know, like, that's the least important position, I think, to have, like, the chiseled body.
Yep.
But it's nice to see Cam Ward taking this stuff seriously as part of his quest to be great. I tie this to, in my mind, Justin, I told you about the David Carr podcast talking. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it yet.
I watched it.
One of the things that stood out that I didn't mention on the last pod when we talked about it is that Derek Carr said one of the Titans coaches reached out to him on behalf of Cam Ward to get his weekly routine, what he does on a day-to-day basis from a preparation standpoint, from a physical nutrition standpoint. And apparently, Derek Carr was speculating that he asked a bunch of different quarterbacks for their routines so that he could sort of study them, take what he thinks will work for him, and build his own very professional focused routine. And I think, you know, I'm just speculating here, this is part of it. I think this is part of that growth is I'm on a routine that also includes taking care of my body. So I'm going to get serious about making sure I eat enough grams of protein every day, don't eat too many carbs, count the calories. And he said he dropped 10 pounds. Justin, I have something I want to show you. I put this together just now. This is why I was sort of distracted. Cam Ward on the left from May 2025. Cam Ward on the right, May 21st, 2026. I noticed the physical difference. And these are both no pads here. I had to go all the way back to rookie minicamp 2025. I looked for OTAs 2025, but Cam Ward didn't go to the podium. He just did that little side field thing where he talked about how 7-on-7 isn't real football or whatever. So I had to go back a little more than a year, but just about a year difference here. You can see how much, I mean, you can see it in like his cheeks and his neck that he's slimmed down. Mm-hmm. You can see his like chest looks a little more defined. I think that he's taking this seriously, and it's really good for Titans fans who want to believe in the future with Cam Ward.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm not going to spend a whole time on it, but a whole lot of time on it. He was a little flabby last year. I think we could call it what it is, right? Like, you saw the weight around the belly. Like you said, you can get away with it at quarterback, like Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, not exactly the physical specimens that ended up in calendars with their shirts off, if you will. But nice to see that he's taking it seriously. He's down 10 pounds. He looks like he's down 10 pounds. Quicker, more athletic, less sluggish. So many positive benefits, right, to kind of slimming down the way that he has.
Yeah, totally agree. So we love to see that. Other Cam Ward updates, not a ton, but talked about working with Wandale Robinson. I think this is a very cute clip here, Justin, from a like bromance standpoint. And, you know, we did the whole Cam Ward, Calvin Ridley bromance thing last year, and we saw how that worked out. But I will just say, asked about Wandale Robinson. Wandale Robinson was asked about Cam, and they said similar things about each other. So I'm going to play their two clips back to back. Wandale talking about Cam and Cam talking about Wandale.
He's just like one of the other guys, and you want to play for a quarterback like that that you can always hang out with outside of football and be cool with, and then whenever it's on the football field, it's all business. So love him to death.
Man, I think he's just a great teammate. He's come in. He's one of the guys who stays up after practice with me when he needs to. He's over. We hang out together all day, every day. But he's the right fit for that slot position. I'm just glad, you know, I get thrown the ball.
I just love the fact that they both went and talked about how each other, how like it wasn't just on the field when they asked about each other.
Yeah.
They're also both unprompted bringing up, we hang out outside of football. Wandale saying he's just one of the guys. Ward saying he's one of the guys who stays after and hangs out. He's over all the time. So I love the bromance that's brewing here. We want Carnell Tate to be awesome, but the more weapons, the better. And I think Wandale Robinson is going to be very impactful in this offense.
Yeah, I don't think I'm spoiling it because I don't think you have the clip. But like Wandale Robinson also said at some point, the fit coming over with Brian Daboll, it kind of like, I don't feel like I've changed teams really, right? Like the playbook and all that, like it's been seamless making the transition with Daboll. So I think he's going to be very important to the offense. Again, I look at the role that he probably plays here. Doesn't really have a lot of competition for reps in the slot. We know some of those other guys can, they all can move around. He can move around, Calvin Ridley, Shimmeray, DK. But I expect him to really command the reps out of the slot. And you want that security blanket, short to intermediate, someone you can rely on, someone you can trust. We hope Carnell Tate does a lot of that as well, but he's also going to be one of your big play guys, your red zone guy, your vertical guy. When you need to move the sticks on 2nd and 7 and you just need that slot receiver to run a reliable slant route, I think Wandale Robinson is going to do a lot of that damage for this team in this offense.
And Cam mentioned that he's playing inside and out. He can play inside and out. That was part of the answer I didn't include in the clip there because I was focusing on the hangout portion. But he ended it by saying he's the right guy to be the slot in our offense. But he also mentioned that he can play inside and out. So I thought that was interesting. Justin, another thing that Cam Ward talked about, this is the last thing I have on Ward, that I also found very interesting was where he's at in this offense. How does he feel going into year two? Does he feel like he's the perfect fit in Daboll's offense after, you know, all the hype around Daboll wanting Cam Ward last year because he thought he was such a good fit? I didn't include that answer in this clip. This is more about what Ward has really focused on working on this offseason and in these practices so far, and how he feels, if he feels the game is slowing down for him in year two. I thought this was a really interesting answer, and we're going to break it down after I play it.
Just being slower in the pocket. Not getting to the top of my drop as fast before the receiver even makes his decision, and just continue to feel the tackle set, not putting them in bad situations, then just continue to lead the football team. I wouldn't think it's slower now. I just think we're running faster plays to where I can control a lot of it. Then I get to see angles of guys where they're going. I just anticipate the throw.
So number one, what he's working on. It sounds like he's mostly working on pocket presence stuff, which is great because, you know, we're not sure how good this offensive line is going to be. The best quarterbacks in football take average or below average offensive lines and aren't hindered by them. They're able to navigate pressure even when pressure arrives. So talking about how he wants to take his drop slower, I thought that was interesting because most of the time you hear about the speed of the game being too fast for young players. For Cam, it sounds more like he's been rushing his process because maybe he's afraid of the speed of the game being too fast. So he's getting to the top of his drop, and his receivers haven't made their breaks yet. Then he's got to just stand there, pat the ball, and wait for them to get to their landmarks before we can throw it. So talking about slowing down that process, I think it's great because you want to hit the top of your drop and have the ball come out, ideally on most plays, assuming that read is open, assuming the defense hasn't taken it away. And then talking about being aware of where the tackles are set. I think we saw Ward do a pretty dang good job navigating the pocket last year, but definitely room for improvement. Definitely times where he would drift a little to his left or a little to his right and be sort of like right behind or right up against his tackles. Having that awareness of where those tackles are setting so that he can sort of navigate to the middle of the pocket and keep himself safe. You want to hear that he's working on accuracy too, because we talked about some of the misses and how little things can be big fixes for some of those accuracy misses. But another thing that can be a big fix for accuracy misses is making sure you have a clean base around you and aren't trying to throw through contact or being pushed or hit as you're getting rid of the ball. So having that better pocket awareness, A, it'll keep the offense on track, less sacks, less throwaways, and B, it will help his accuracy because he won't be throwing under duress as much.
Rhythm, timing, footwork, making sure everything's in sync. A lot of the things that you and I have talked about, you know, that he needs to work on and improve this offseason, It's a lot of what he said, right, in my opinion. And also, like, watching the Derek Carr, David Carr homegrown podcast episode on Cam Ward, a lot of the little things they pointed out. I think he's a very self-aware quarterback, a very self-aware human being, in all honesty. So not surprised that he knows exactly what he has to work on. He's putting the work in. And then I also think this coaching staff, right? Like Brian Daboll is offensive coordinator, Shea Tierney is quarterback's coach. They've got a good staff here that's going to be able to help him kind of grow and develop throughout OTAs, training camp, work on those things that he needs to improve in. So it's May, and I'd say he's on the right track. His head is exactly where it should be.
Yeah, and then the other part of that, the other half of that answer, well, the second answer, really, talking about, you know, how has the game slowed down for you? He says, I don't think it's slowing down. I think our offense is faster. There's so much to break down about this. I wish someone had followed up. What do you mean the offense is fast? The players are faster? The plays develop faster? What does that actually mean? I'll give you what I think it means. I don't know, obviously, for sure, but it sounds like Cam has the ability to make decisions faster, that there are less slow developing plays where like two-man routes with max protection where you're taking a nine-step drop and trying to hit somebody deep. Like obviously some of those plays will still be in the playbook, but a lot of quick stuff, a lot of timing stuff, a lot of get the ball out of your hand, a lot of spread the field, assess where the defense is. He said, I get to control it. That basically means they're trusting him to read the field post-snap and determine where the ball goes based on where the coverage is. He gets to control it. I get to read angles and throw with anticipation. Some of the stuff that we said he was best at coming out of college when we broke down his film last year. I love that this is the offense that he's in. I think this is clearly a Brian Daboll thing. And I think this idea of playing of the offense is faster is going to help everybody. It helps the offensive line because they don't have to hold up for as long. Receivers get to their break points quicker. The timing will be distributed to where the first receiver's break is a second before the second receiver's break is a second before the third receiver's break so that Ward can go through those progressions and hit the guys. I just love that it feels like he has such a command already of a brand new offense. It sounds like he's picking it up fast, and I love all this.
Yeah, I agree. I keep wondering, and I think I said it a few weeks ago, I keep wondering if this offense is going to be pass happier than we're expecting it to be. I keep wondering if they think they've got a dude in Cam and they're just like, we're going to ride this thing till the wheels fall off. You look at the offseason, you know, acquisitions, if you will, priority, get him a weapon at number 4 overall, right? Carnell Tate. Bring in Robinson, $70 million contract, upgrade this wide receiver room. A willingness to keep Calvin Ridley, right? Like, let's see if he's willing to take a pay cut, have those discussions with him, and keep a 1,000-yard receiver in this room instead of just, a lot of teams I think would have just cut Calvin Ridley, in all honesty, right? But getting creative, keeping him around, doing nothing at running back outside of a 5th-round pick, right? Like, I keep wondering if they're going to be way past happier than most people think they're going to be. That could be a Cam Ward 4,000-yard season, a breakout sophomore year. Like, everything we're thinking of, I could totally see it being the case. Of course, the caveat is hopefully the O-line can hold up, right? Especially that interior that they're still working through.
This is a great comment from Hershey Forever. It's kind of a joke, I think, but it's also pretty accurate. He says, buck the 12 trend and go 5 wide, baby. Let's go. Talking about the recent league trending towards more heavy personnel, more tight end usage. There's a chart that was floating around on Twitter a couple weeks ago. Shows every team's percentage of snaps from 11 and 12 personnel last year. And that's funny. I'll get to that in a second. And Brian Daboll was near the top of the league in 11 personnel percentage. Even last year, as we're trending towards this new era of heavy, I guess it's trending back towards an old era. You know, the league is so cyclical. You go from 11 to 12 right. to 11 to 12. As defenses become heavier to defend 12, then you go back to 11. As defenses become lighter to defend 11, you go back to 12. So right now the league is going back to 12. Are the Titans maybe going to be ahead of this? Because it's not like defensive coordinators around the league don't know everybody's going to 12. We saw the second round, third round of the draft this year where like 30 tight ends came off the board. Like everybody
early
wants...
Too. Like earlier than they should have gone.
Yes, everyone's reaching for these tight ends because everybody wants to run more heavy personnel. We just saw Seattle win a Super Bowl, basically work in the personnel. We've seen Sean McVay go to this new heavy set thing. It's all to counter what defenses are doing. McVay was a big pioneer in taking the league back to 11 personnel. Now he's taking the league back to 12 and even 13 personnel. The Brian Daboll's offense in New York didn't follow this trend, mostly stayed in 11. And I think when, you know, you talk about Robert Saleh, when Robert Saleh was talking about hiring Brian Daboll, this is a few months ago now, talked about how most offenses in the league are running a version of the Shanahan scheme, and most defenses are preparing for that on a week-to-week basis. Brian Daboll's offense is going to be more difficult to prepare against because it's not what you're seeing every week from everybody else. I wonder if part of that, I wonder if they had this conversation even, where Brian came into the office and was like, look, I know everyone's going 12. If everybody goes 12, it's not an advantage to run 12 anymore. What if we stay 11? I know 11. It's what I do best. I think it allows a quarterback like Cam to just spread the field and have multiple options to throw to, spread the defense out, let him read it. He's capable of reading it. Probably said something like, I did the same thing with Josh back in Buffalo. And so I think it's really interesting. The Titans are going to play a lot of 11 personnel, and it's going to be a fast offense. There's another comment in here I wanted to hit from RX Lee. Play call is faster, which lets him read the defense and get things right before the snap. This is another big deal that I think was an issue last year, was play calls coming in late, and then you have less time to assess what the defense looks like pre-snap. Yeah, Cam Ward mentioned this too, that the play calls are simple. Even the longer play calls have been simplified and get right to the point is what Cam said about them. So I think that everything Brian Daboll's doing is so far, I mean, it's OTAs. Everybody feels great about where they're at in OTAs. We felt pretty good about where the Titans were at this time last year, and obviously that didn't work out. You feel that way this time every year because there's not very much that can go wrong outside of injury during OTAs. But all that said, this is what you want to see at this point in the year, and I feel like things are trending in the right direction.
I think Brian Daboll has a quarterback that he really, really likes and trusts and believes in, and I think Cam Ward's got a play caller, an offensive coordinator that he likes and trusts and believes in. And I do feel the process of going away, not hiring a coordinator that was a McVay Shanahan sort of clone, because there's so many of them when it comes to the zone, like your Clint Kubiaks. And I mean, they're all over the league now, right? When it comes to running your zone based systems. Very, very interesting that they wanted to get away from that and do something different. You go get Brian Daboll, who of course cut his teeth in New England, and those offenses were never the zone-based offense. It was the, you know, Earnhardt Perkins system and things of that nature. Very, very different. So certainly interesting, you know, the way that they're implementing this offense in OTAs right now.
Anything else from Cam, from Saleh, Wandale that you want to hit here, Justin, or should we move on and talk about the headline of the day, Carnell Tate's incredible performance?
Do you want to take one final break for the audio before we do that?
Yes, we'll be right back. Welcome back, audio audience. All right, Justin, let's talk about the biggest buzz point, the headline of the practice, the Titans' fourth overall pick, wide receiver Carnell Tate. Can he be a wide receiver one? He was never a wide receiver one at Ohio State. Can he actually do that in the NFL? Is he just a high-end wide receiver two? Did the Titans reach? Did they overdraft this guy? I don't know, man. It's only one practice. Oh, that's a great call.
Carnell Tate.
Thank you, Jordan, for reminding me to hit the drop. I texted Justin last night. The Carnell Tate drop is going to bang so hard tomorrow, and I totally forgot that it existed.
It took 42 minutes to actually break it out.
Until that comment came in. But
Carnell Tate
was dominant at practice on Thursday. I mentioned Wandale Robinson said he's had a great week. Now, I don't want to overreact to one practice, but
I do.
The buzz coming out of this, every person who was there has come away saying, this guy looks different. This guy has the just oozes wide receiver one energy. And there was like jokes made about that coming out of the NFLPA rookie event, where the photo of all the rookies, Carnell Tate standing there, and everybody's like, look, he just looks like a wide receiver one. I mean, a lot of guys can look like a wide receiver one. That doesn't mean they play like a wide receiver one. Carnell Tate, so far, at least in this one open practice, and according to Wandale, all week, plays like a wide receiver one. Everybody who was at practice, I can't stress this enough, the people who were there to see him in person were blown away by how impressive he was on the field. Justin, how excited are you for Carnell Tate to potentially come in and be a wide receiver one from the jump?
I'm incredibly excited. Like I said earlier, the Jim Wyatt observations article, team high, 6 catches. Look at that B-roll playing. It just looks beautiful. 3 would-be touchdowns, short, intermediate, long. There was a 50-yard deep ball to him. I'm excited, man. I'm excited. I love that they took this leap at number 4 overall. making the decision to invest in their sophomore quarterback, knowing that if Cam Ward's going to be truly great, let's give him a wide receiver one that he can grow with. Let's get them on the same timeline, right? The Cam Ward and Carnell Tate relationship, the sophomore to the rookie. They're not going to mess it up this time. You look at the size of his hands. I mean, the strength that he has in his hands. There's a lot to love about Carnell Tate. It is so, so exciting that he's hitting the ground running. Again, this was his third ever OTA practice. I know it's OTAs, but to go out there and show no learning curve, to catch 6 balls, 3 touchdowns, he's got 7 more OTA practices, right, coming up this week and next. And then they're going to have 2 mandatory mini camp days before they break for training camp. The way that he is preparing and growing, developing throughout this period, so that when training camp, you know, arrives and he's got the pads on and the intensity of practice picks up and they've got 3 preseason games and they're hoping to have a bunch of joint practices and obviously the padded practices at camp. I'm just really excited about the trajectory that he's on. This is not his peak, right? He's going to keep getting better. May, June, July, August. You should see a guy who looks super comfortable, who's going to start week one in this offense, be the X receiver, be the Z, whatever they ask him to be. I'm just really pumped. And I think we're going to look back, and I always had him as wide receiver one in this class, was a no-brainer. But that little audience of not just Titans fans, but I think other people, you know, the general draft fans who reacted and went, whoa, you know, I'm shocked they went Carnell Tate over Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles. I think that portion is going to look back and say, damn, you know, I think Titans knew exactly what they were doing. And they were wise to give their growing quarterback a wide receiver one.
This catch that Jim Wyatt posted, just a messing around catch, the one-handed catch here that you're seeing if you're watching on YouTube, no gloves. Can I point that out? No gloves. Sticky hands. This guy's hands are incredible. Justin, his 3 touchdowns reportedly came on the following sequences: a play-action bomb, a coverage bust. It was reportedly Kevin Winston Jr. and Marcus Harris, who maybe miscommunicated or somebody didn't get back. And Ward finds Tate deep for a 50-plus-yard touchdown. Then in a hurry-up drill, he hits Tate close to the goal line. They go down, they score a touchdown in this hurry-up drill. All the reporting was that Ward looked his best on the day during this drill. And hits Tate coming across the middle. It's in this montage here. I think it's the, let's see, it's this one here. If you're watching again on YouTube, hits Tate coming across the middle, who gets, you know, the last 4 yards into the end zone. Brian Daboll came up and said, no, you may have scored in real life. No, you got touchdown at the 4-yard line. Run this one more play from the 4-yard line. And on that next play here, I'll jump ahead in this little montage of clips. On the next play, you're seeing it on your screen now. Well, let me go back a little. Ward looks around the defense and hits Tate in the back of the end zone, who makes a high point, leaping, toe-tapping touchdown grab. I mean, this guy was making plays, according to everyone out there, at all 3 levels of the field. That's what a wide receiver one does. He's not limited to being your deep threat. He's not limited to being a possession short player. He's going to make plays at all 3 levels of the field. And I think something you said there was really interesting, that the learning curve that isn't there. He doesn't really have a learning curve.
No.
Wandale Robinson said he's a pro. He does everything right. He doesn't have to come in and learn how to be a pro. Why? Because the Titans drafted from the best well of NFL receiving talent that exists in the world, the Ohio State University, where Brian Hartline gets guys ready to play professional football, to be pros. So Carnell Tate enters his first OTA sessions with the knowledge of Brian Hartline, who played a lot of years in the league and is one of the best wide receiver coaches and is now the head coach of where, Justin? I don't remember. I mean, the Ohio State factory might die because Brian Hartline is not there anymore. But they got the last guy coming out. Well, I guess Jeremiah Smith is going to be the last guy, maybe. And they even have another 5-star recruit coming in. So maybe Brian Hartline's not as important as I think. But in terms of getting these guys to a pro-ready level, I think he is vitally important. And we're seeing it play out right away as Carnell Tate comes in and looks like the best receiver on the field as a rookie.
You know how hard it is to get to Ohio State and contribute right away? Okay, when he got there in 2023, they had Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka. They had a great tight end in Cade Stover, and he contributed right away for them. Okay, like you're talking about him being pro ready, being ready to play. He actually played. No red shirt, none of that. He comes out here as a junior, right? Titans draft him. He's one of the younger players in the draft. When you get the chance to draft a junior who was a three-year contributor where he was at a program like Ohio State, he had like, what, 300 receiving yards in 2020. I've got the numbers up in front of me right now. I mean, I know it doesn't jump off the screen, but he had 18 catches for 265 yards. He averaged 15 yards per catch in 2023. And then he just got better and better. 2024, 2025, three-year contributor. I mean, of course he's ready to play. He played right away. It's impossible to do with that program. You've got to be ready to go. You've got to be ready to go out of high school to be able to do that. And he was. So, yeah, they've got a pro-ready guy who's going to be ready to contribute immediately in week one.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that it's a really exciting time for this Titans offense. I'm excited. I'm impressed. I feel like it's coming together. And maybe I'll regret these words because it's May, and that's how literally every single team in the league feels right now. I mean, maybe not every single team. I don't know if you've seen clips of the Falcons quarterbacks like throwing the ball into the dirt and sailing it. Like, neither of them look very good. But the point is, it's May. Everybody feels good right now. But I think that, again, this is what you want to see. And I agree with this comment that everyone is telling us to pump the brakes. It's too early to react. But if Tate had gone out there and looked like Treylon Burks did in his first OTA, or even like Corey Davis, who didn't really do anything bad, but was just kind of like invisible, we're always kind of like waiting for him to like do more. Those people would be talking about how Tate was the wrong pick if he wasn't out there making plays already. So Hershey Forever wants me to declare that the Titans are going to the Super Bowl. Not going to do that. Annie Freeze two times has a question, Justin. When is the last time we felt this confident about a wide receiver we drafted? I mean, I felt pretty confident about Corey Davis based on the tape. I was a big Corey Davis fan based on his tape. But once he got to the NFL, like I just said, it always felt like we were waiting for a little bit more. A.J. Brown, I was pretty dang confident in. He was making plays early in training camp. I think he suffered like some sort of offseason injury that took him out of either the mini camps or the training. There was something that he was dealing with. But week one against the Cleveland Browns, I think he had, what, 3 for 99, including a deep over catch that was incredible, or a catch and run, maybe. I felt pretty dang confident A.J. Brown was going to be a stud. I don't know. I think I get some similar vibes right now from Carnell Tate, just in terms of, like, my confidence level in him not being a bust. I think the ceiling is still the question, and we got to see him do it in pads, against physical corners, against starting level defenders. I mean, Cordell Flott was not out there. John Frankelmeyer, Jeffrey Simmons, not out there. Jermaine Johnson, like, that's at least four starters on defense who are not on the field. There's no pads, there's no contact. So a lot to still be, you know, revealed about how good Carnell Tate can be. But right now, my confidence in him is sky high.
Yeah, as it should be. And now I know, like, I don't want, like, the question is, how confident were we this early? With A.J. Brown being a second round pick, I think we were pumped up, but the confidence level early, probably not as high as a number four overall pick. Now, obviously, if Carnell Tate turns into A.J. Brown, I couldn't be happier. One of the best, you know, superstar wide receivers in the NFL. This time you sign him to a second contract and keep him around, obviously. But the point is, at the confidence level at the beginning, for Carnell Tate, as high as it's ever been, in my opinion, for any receiver this team has ever drafted.
Yeah, and shout out to Roster Grids, Justin. Regular viewer, Iron Grids TV, new handle, Roster Grids. Love it. Love the rebrand. And thanks for joining us today on the live show. All right, Justin, I just have a few other little things I want to hit from practice here before we close out this episode with some live discussion chat. But some random things, right? This is the biggest one to me. I've teased it multiple times in this show already, but the offensive line. The starting center is already determined. It's already locked up. I'm sorry, Jackson Slater, you are a guard. You are not going to start at center. I'm sorry, Pat Coogan, but as a sixth-round rookie, you're not going to come in and become the starter, at least not this year. Cordell Volson, you may be competing at right guard. The center spot is locked up. Here's how I know. This is Peter Skoronski, who was asked about how have you seen the competitions at center and right guard coming along? What do you make of where those positions are at right now? This is Skoronski's answer. The important part is buried in the middle. Doesn't maybe stand out right away, but I'll break it down after we listen to it.
I've definitely seen a ton of professionalism from all those guys, really. Austin Schlottman's been in the system, so he knows it really well, and has kind of been the anchor of that group because of how well he knows the system. But he's a pro. He's been in the league for forever, and totally what I expected in terms of his professionalism, ability, his intelligence at the center position, which you need. And so that's been awesome. And then Cordell and Jackson, I think, have been really good and sledding around, but have been really on top of things schematically, which has been the biggest challenge so far since we haven't done much in the field. But everyone's way held the standards. Everyone's competing really well, and they've all been real pros about everything. I think that's been impressive.
So, Justin, there are two dead giveaways here. Number one, he only mentioned three players. Right? There's supposedly roster battles going on at two positions. That would mean a minimum of four players involved. Well, he only mentioned one person competing for the center job, Austin Schlottman. And if we go even deeper, the center job is the most important position on the offensive line to have a deep understanding of the system, of the protection schemes, of the different fronts that you might face, and how that changes the blocking scheme, whether it's a run play or a pass play. And he talked about how Austin Schlottman knows the system inside and out. He's obviously played in it, played with for Brian Daboll and Carmen Brasillo for the last few years in New York. And that clearly has carried over. You mentioned earlier how Wandale Robinson felt like he barely changed teams, how he's come in and like Wandale said that there are a couple little language things that have changed, but for the most part, it's the same. Wandale also said, side note, this is, I love this. Cam's had a few plays he wanted to put in, so I had to learn those. Love it. I love that Cam is doing that. You know, he knows what he likes. He knows what he wants. I bet he told Brian Daboll, four verts has got to be in this playbook. Switch verts has got to be in this playbook. But anyway, back to Austin Schlottman. Look, center, at the center job, it is of the utmost vital importance to know the system. I would argue, Justin, that the center job is the one spot on the O-line where what you do mentally is more important than what you do physically. Because in pass protection, the center is often helping one of the guards or even one of the tackles. The center rarely has a one-on-one pass blocking matchup. Even in the run game, the center is usually, you know, knocking a tackle off the line and then climbing to hit a guard, or occasionally they have to make a tough reach block, but that depends on your run system and your scheme. For the most part, getting everybody aligned, helping your quarterback identify potential blitzers, and getting the protection set is the most important thing. Austin Schlottman's your starting center. It is what it is. At least to begin the season, I will say with 100% confidence on May 22nd, Austin Schlottman is your starting center.
I would be shocked if he wasn't, right? Because you're talking about a veteran who has played in this league for several years, started four games for Brian Daboll and we always leave Carmen Brasillo out of this a little bit, and Carmen Brasillo last year is going to come in here and compete with a sixth round rookie. I don't think so. I think the moment that we found out, and there's been hints along the way, that Jackson Slater is essentially a right guard. To me, Jackson Slater was the only viable competition for Austin Schlottman at center, if that was the route they wanted to go. With Slater playing guard, I think, yeah, Austin Startman, as we get in the comment there, I do think he's going to be the starter at center in week one. Knowing the system, having played for these coaches before, and only up against a sixth round rookie, like that's not really a roster battle. Like we keep talking about this. We might have to stop using the word altogether. I bet the Titans don't even consider it a competition. I don't think there's a position battle happening at center if Jackson Slater's not in that mix, which we don't believe he is. It is the veteran center they went out and signed very early in free agency that has played for the position coach and the offensive coordinator before. Yeah. I don't think there's a whole lot else to it.
I think it was a situation where they wanted some top of the market center option, but yeah. I would bet, and you know, we got that report from Paul Kaharsky that they were surprised by the market, and the Bills guy, Connor McGovern, goes back to Buffalo, so they don't even have a shot at him. Tyler Linderbaum signs for way more money than anyone expected. I bet they had, and the Luke Fortner was reportedly in the mix, but it didn't really, there was never any reported connection that the Titans were looking at
and
him.
And he signed a cheap contract. It was a one-year contract he got in Carolina, I think, Luke Fortner. It was a cheap deal.
I would guess that the Titans probably had a board, a free agency board, that was tiered out with Linderbaum at the top, knowing that he was probably going to be out of their price range, with McGovern number two as their primary target. If we could sign one free agent, that we get to pick. We're going to go get this guy. Although maybe that just applies to offense because they definitely wanted John Franklin Myers too. But anyway, I think they really wanted to go after McGovern when he went back to Buffalo before free agency even started. And when the Linderbaum market started to emerge, I bet they had Austin Schlottman as their next target up. And I bet they felt, because they know him, Brasillo and Daboll and even Shea Tierney and even Marquand Manuel was there in New York. He wasn't coaching him. But
and Wendell Robinson and Daniel Bellinger.
Like, all these guys knew him and know who he is and know what he's about and know what he can bring to this offense. They would have more confidence in him than somebody who was just watching his tape and wondering if he can come in and be their starter. They seem pretty confident because they didn't make another move at center. They still haven't. They drafted Pat Coogan in the sixth round. That's the only other center move that they made. I bet that they went after Schlottman, viewing him as their starter. And I totally agree with you. I think they probably view the right guard battle as the battle on the offensive line.
The only
one. And again, contextual clues don't reveal the picture, Peter Skoronski talking about everyone involved in the competition, mentioning Schlottman, and then mentioning both Jackson Slater and Cordell Volson. I mean, that's the biggest tell to me that this is a one-man battle and that this is Schlottman's job. So we don't spend any more time on it. We don't, like, I'm not here to say that he's going to be an awesome center or anything. Like, I don't know how good he's going to be. I don't know if this is a mistake by the front office and the coaching staff, but I do know that this is not a position battle. This is locked up. This is your starting center. Get used to it, Titans fans. It's one less storyline we have to sort of tinker with throughout the offseason here.
Yeah, I do think what sort of happened, and I'm just going to be honest with you, at center, it's like there's obviously some sort of panic involved, right? Like no Linderbaum, no Connor McGovern. Like it didn't go the way they wanted it to. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and sell it to you somewhere different, right? Like I don't think it went how they wanted it to. So they go, the smartest pivot is to bring a guy in who knows the system, who I've coached before, that's Brian Daboll, who I've coached before, that's Carmen Brasillo, right? And it just, we obviously like him, or we wouldn't have signed him, right? Like, we know he's competitive, he's smart, high football IQ, he can run this system. And I thought about what you said earlier, like, the center's usually a guy, not a lot of one-on-one pass protection. If it's a help situation, the best chance that this O-line has, and it sounds kind of silly for me to say, but you trust Peter Skoronski to win one-on-one. We don't love what's going on at center right guard, but if they're helping each other out on almost every rep, we believe we can survive there without it having to be a super high profile guy, because they're going to have a 2v1 a lot of the time, right? It's a combo block, whatever it is. We feel good about that. That's the best case scenario for this offensive line, is that Skoronski is handling his biz one-on-one like we know he can. Center right guard teaming up combo blocks helps kind of negate some of the shortcomings there, right? Gives them a bit of a hidden advantage. But I'm with you. Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer that he's the week one center.
I think he's the week 17, 18 center too. I'm seeing a lot of comments coming in here about how Coogan will be the starter by the bye week or a few weeks later. Austin will struggle and Coogan takes over by week 4. I think Coogan is going to be the starter by week 5. Coogan will compete next season. I think that's probably closer to accurate. I give Coog a redshirt year, and he will be the starter next season. Look, I think you guys are not being very realistic about a sixth-round pick, and I understand that sixth-round pick starters emerge in the NFL all the time, maybe even more than we think. But I think that Pat Coogan is definitely on a redshirt year plan. I think all these guys, you come out on day 3 as an offensive lineman, like, you got to go through an NFL strength and conditioning. You got to go through a year of NFL strength and conditioning to really get to the point where you can compete for a starting job. We saw with Jackson Slater. I mean, we had the same conversations about Jackson Slater last year. Could he take over? When could he take over? Yeah, is he going to take over midseason? He didn't play until week 18, right? There's a reason.
It's this simple. You don't draft a guy in the sixth round expecting him to start right away. You just don't.
Right. And I agree with this comment from Jordan. If Austin Schlottman struggles, I think it's more likely Slater slides over and you put somebody else at right guard than it is that you start Pat. I don't think Pat Coogan will play his rookie season. I think it would take 3 or 4 injuries to the interior offensive line. And I like Pat Coogan as a prospect. I love his leadership abilities. I love, you know, some of the big game stages he played on in college at both Notre Dame and Indiana. Like, there's a lot to like about Pat Coogan's future. But let's be real. You don't draft anybody at any position on day 3 with an eye towards year 1. Day three picks, usually an eye towards year two and beyond. We saw this even last year, guys like Marcus Harris, except for the rookie receivers, I guess, and tight end. But guys like Marcus Harris, Kalel Mullings barely played, Jackson Slater barely played. Like, Marcus Harris didn't get into the lineup until way deep into the season, even when they were dealing with a massacre to the cornerback room. It still took Harris a long time to get on the field. That's because he's a day three rookie. And Pat Coogan is a day three rookie. And Fernando Carmona, who we were being asked to talk more about here in the comments, also a day three rookie. Like, I'm not expecting anything from a day three rookie. I'll expect something out of a day three year two player, but not a day three rookie.
I think
that this is wrapped up.
And like Iron Grids, I don't know that it's a mystery. I think he's a fifth round pick, right? Like, he might be the swing backup eventually behind Skoronski and Slater. And guess what? Like, if Slater doesn't work out at right guard, it gives them a plan B alternative young player to try to develop into a starter, right? Like, I don't think there has to be some grand plan for Fernando Carmona. And I know this is going to be a weird example, but I think of like the Seattle Seahawks who, like, they're starting Anthony Bradford at right guard and they've been dying to replace him for years and they just can't seem to do it. He's not very good, but they drafted Christian Haynes in the third round a couple years ago and he hasn't been very good. So now this year they went out and drafted Bo Stevens in the fifth round. Like, it's just, you kind of have a succession plan before things even go haywire, right? Like, if Slater doesn't work out, attention shifts to eventually developing Carmona. But if Carmona is just a swing guard for his entire rookie contract, like, newsflash, they're not all going to be starters. They're not all going to be phenomenal players. Just reality of the beast, right? Like, they're not going to hit on all eight picks being starters. If Carmona is a rosterable player and a swing backup, that's fine too.
Right? That's a win for a fifth-round pick.
Right? Like, I'd wager only one of those guys, week one, like Coog, Carmona, I wager only one of them are even going to be active. Like, one of them's going to be in t-shirt and shorts for most of the year. I'm going to guess it's Coogan who's active because he can snap, right? Like, yeah. And then you'll have Cordell Volson active who can back up both spots, right? So it's like, they're going to have options, but one of those guys is going to be inactive most weeks.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of comments coming in here that we're underrating Coogan. Like, yeah, I'm just telling you that a six-round pick, like, look, all that stuff is great. Okay, he didn't give up a sack. Rose Bowl MVP, national champion, starting center. I get it. I know his profile. Like,
he might be a future starter for all those
absolutely.
Reasons.
Absolutely. I think it makes sense to view him as the future starter. I don't know how Austin Slotman's going to do or if he's going to be here next year or the year after, but if Austin Slotman plays great this year, which, you know, it's a big mystery. We have no idea how he's going to play. If he plays great this year, I'm not willing to sit here and say Pat Coogan is definitely the starter next year or even competing for it. Because if Slotman plays great, he's back and they may extend him and bring him back again. And if
but
Coogan,
he's on a 2-year deal, I think, Slotman. He's not even on an expiring contract. That sowed some confidence to give him 2 years, right?
That's what I'm saying. I think that we underrated this when he was signed. We viewed him as like a backup level guy and they view him as a starter. And I think that's what it is.
It's not ideal. I think they view him as a starter because they're like, well, we didn't have any other choices here, right? Like in free agency, we missed out on some of the guys and he knows the system and we like him. And it's a low, I think it's 2 years, about $8 million, $8.5 million, something along those lines. Ross, good question here, Roster Grids, follow-up. Is he possible in play for center? That's more what I meant by mystery. I mean, look, they're probably going to cross-train him because... Sorry?
Carmona, that is, for the audio.
Yes, sorry. The question's about Carmona. I imagine they're going to cross-train him because every backup interior lineman tends to do some cross-training, but I don't think so, to be honest with you. You've got Slotman, you've got Jackson Slater who can snap, you drafted Pat Coogan. I don't think Carmona's in play at center at all. Remember, he started his college career as a left tackle and then made the switch to guard, which I think is best for him because, you know, there's certain deficiencies there that work better inside than outside. But he's got no experience at center, right? It was tackled and it's guard. They've got three guys on the active roster who can snap. I don't think he's a fit at center at all. And I'd wager that he's going to be the one who's inactive most of his rookie year. And I'll quickly put a bow on it. RX Lee's, like, all the questions about, or the comments about Coogan, like, two spots, right? Center and right guard. And I think you're in agreement with me, and it might be boring because everyone wants to love rookies. Two positions, top three guys at those positions, none of them are the rookies, right? It's Slotman, it's Slater, and it's Volson. More likely, more often than not.
No, I don't even think it's more likely. I think that is a definite. And again,
probably
right now, Right now, it is a 1,000% confirmed definite. The rookies are behind. They have to focus more on understanding what the play call means than they have to worry about competing for a starting job. They're competing for a roster spot right now. We're talking about day three rookies. Now, by the end of training camp, that could change, okay? And maybe somebody supplants one of those guys in that top three mix. But right now, it is a veterans game, and that's what OTAs really, like, reveal, is that, you know, unless you're Carnell Tate looking like a veteran, looking like the best receiver on the field from day one, you're not going to be battling for a starting job right now. But, Justin, before we move on and close out the show, there are two other notes I wanted to make about guys who are rookies, who are showing something a little bit maybe, and are competing for starting jobs. Anthony Hill Jr. apparently had a great day, had a pick six off Hendon Hooker. So keep that in mind. It's against that. Hendon Hooker. But love to see the rookie getting a pick six already right off the bat in his first open practice of his career. And Keldrick Falk had a sack, reportedly, or a would-be sack. Obviously, they're not bringing quarterbacks to the ground.
No contact.
I think it was on Levis, but I'm not 100% sure who it was on. So you love to see that. The next two picks after Carnell Tate also making plays, like at least putting their stamp in some way or another on the day with, you know, a pick six is a huge play. A sack is like a nice play. It's not a game changer, maybe. It could be, but so you like to see that from both of those guys out there making plays.
Agreed. Yeah, I loved hearing that Anthony Hill had the interception off Hendon Hooker, a would-be pick six. I expect big things from Anthony Hill as a rookie. We just talked about not expecting big things from rookies, but I think it's a little different when you're a second-round pick and you're a linebacker, and I think there's some room there for improvement at that position opposite Cedric Gray. So expecting a good year for Anthony Hill. Can't wait to watch him.
Yeah, and you know, just to combat this, there's a comment here. OTA stats don't matter to me. Yeah, the OTA stats shouldn't matter, but, you know, it's nice to see your rookie second-round pick getting a pick six. I'd rather he do that than not do that in a practice, especially against the third-string, fourth-string quarterback. Another note I had is about the quarterbacks. I don't want to talk about this. Nobody wants to talk about this, but we have to talk about it because it's a story. Will Levis was slinging the ball around out there. Now, Mitch Trubisky didn't practice, right? So Will Levis was the effective QB2 in this training camp session. He apparently had a pretty good day. He did throw an interception of his own. But other than that, he reportedly played very well. He completed a higher percentage of his passes on the day than Cam. Cam was 11 for 17. Levis was 10 for 14 with an interception, and also apparently he like bobbled a snap and ended up taking a bad sack, which that's sort of the story of Will Levis. But he was also airing it out, dropping bombs, hit a deep one to Bryce Oliver. Like, Will Levis reportedly played pretty decently well.
Cool.
Wandale Robinson was finally asked about him in the presser after the practice and talked about how it's nice to be reunited with a guy that he played with 4 years ago. But look, a lot of time has passed since these two guys played together. But anyway, like, Will Levis, I hope he plays incredibly well. I hope he makes himself an asset. Go make yourself tradable, Will. I hope that Cam plays like the first two or three series in the preseason games and Levis plays the entirety of the rest of the game for all the preseason games and that he plays really well in them so that on September 2nd, they can trade him for a third round pick or something.
I mean, look, I think it's like we're doing covering this the right way. I don't want to sound, it'd be stupid of us, like he's a Titans player. I want him to play as well as he can play. Like you said, there's a little bit of a hidden agenda there. The better he plays, the more tradable he becomes. But like, I wasn't sitting here hoping he had a terrible day on Thursday. It's great that he had a good day and the offense was looking good and he was humming along with some of those backups. KJ Osborne, by the way, got with so many receivers absent. I mentioned him several weeks ago, KJ Osborne, as being like a really interesting receiver who's here right now because he had a lot, like some success in the NFL for a while and it seemed to go away oddly quickly. KJ Osborne had a good day. I think Will Levis probably played a big role in that, right? Probably got a lot of reps together. So good news when any Titans quarterback is on the field, playing well, completing passes, increasing his stock reputation around the league. Happy that Will had a good day.
Anything else, Justin, that stood out from the observation reports that you read? Anything else from this practice worth talking about, or should we?
Incredibly thorough today. We've been live for an hour and 15 minutes. I start a couple comments. We did miss one super chat that came in after we did the run of super chats. So let's make sure we hit this one here from Henna 7540. $5 Canadian super chat tip. Go buy yourself some canola oil, boys. at 75-40. We appreciate the super chat tip. He's obviously from my neck of the woods somewhere because it's a Canadian super chat tip. And the question everyone's been waiting the answer for on this live chat, Graver, the Smeg toaster, is it 2 or 4 slices? What did you get yourself?
Well, we didn't get it ourselves. It was a wedding gift off of our registry. 4, baby. It's massive. It's a huge, it's the biggest toaster I've ever seen. It defrosts, it does bagels, it does toast. It's incredible. It's awesome. I love it.
One of Graber's aunts did not cheap out on the toaster. She got him the 4 slice.
It was a friend of my parents, and shout out to them. I don't remember who you are, but we are in the process of writing thank you notes. We have like 80 thank you notes to write. It's a lot of
writing.
Don't
forget
that. We're gonna get it
done. The Smeg toaster is a big one.
And Lemdaz says, you know, he's the one who gave the $49.99 super chat with the comment, get yourself a nice new toaster, and says, well, send me my money back if you already have a toaster. Crying laughing emoji. Just kidding. Thank you, Lemdaz, again. We appreciate it. Justin, this one's for you from Kitty Cat Jones. Mello, that Cat Dad shirt you had the other day was peak. Peak
Thank
what?
You
I don't
so
know.
Much.
I'm not up on the lingo, but peak something.
It was good. How old are you? You're younger than me, I think. It was a good shirt. It was a nice shirt, he would say, is what
that
means.
I get what it means, but it's like, was peak. It was like, was peak awesome? Was peak mellow shirt?
I think it was peak awesome is what he means. I love my Cat Dad shirt. My partner made that for me after we got a cat that I initially did not want. And in typical fashion, absolutely fell in love with. I love the cat. I say hi to the cat before I say hi to her. And when she gets mad at me, I say the honeymoon phase is over. We've been together a long time, but me and the cat, this is a fresh new love. I love the cat so freaking much.
JPSNHU wants me to spill the tea. What did Orr get you for that promised wedding present? Now, if you are a Heed the Call listener or follower, you know what this is about. If you're not, you don't. I assume that JPSNHU is clearly, obviously, a Heed the Call fan if he even knows what this is about. Or he or she, I don't know. I'm not going to assume. Yes, there was a whole bet. Justin, I'll fill you in. So around October last year, the Jaguars had just beat the 49ers, right? It was the week after that game, the Liam Cohen-Robert Saleh game, which is going to be awesome to watch twice a year. But last year, right after that game, we did our weekly power rankings for Heed the Call. And all of us put the Jags above the Niners because the Jags had literally just come off of beating the Niners. And Connor put the Niners above the Jags. And I sort of went at Connor. I was like, how can you put the Niners above the Jags? Because of your ranking, Connor, he put them so far above that he moved the average so that in our group final power rankings, the Niners were above the Jags despite having just lost to them. And I was like, now I'm going to post this graphic on social media and everyone's going to get mad at me for posting it, for wondering why the Niners, who just lost to the Jags, are ranked above them. And I'm like, it's Connor's fault. Connor's the one who put them there. Connor comes on the next episode and he's like, Justin, if you really believe that the Niners are better, that the Jags are better than the Niners, let's put your money where your mouth is. I'll make you a bet. And he holds up 3 envelopes. He's like, right here, I have the Orr Premium Wedding Gift. This is what I get. We always go above and beyond. He said, he talked about the new, we talked about this, Justin, a little bit, but the New Jersey.
Off air, you and I talked about it.
The New Jersey way is like, you go, you figure out, you call the venue, you call the vendors, you figure out how much does it cost per plate at this wedding, and you give that much money to the couple to cover yourself and your guests or you and
American
your wife.
American weddings are so different from the weddings that I've been to. I mean, I know I'm stereotyping a little bit, but like, I always think of American weddings as people being like, I don't want to call them cheap, but put it this way. Like, if you guys aren't like, when I go to a wedding, me and my partner, especially in 2026, obviously times have changed. It's gotten more, right? I'm putting like $500 in an envelope because I know that that person is paying about $200, give or take, for me to attend that wedding per person. That's how much these weddings cost here. Very European. It's not a Canadian wedding. Very European style wedding. I'm Portuguese. My partner's Italian. Everyone I know is European here, okay? Very European. And in New Jersey, New York, like, you've got a lot of these East Coasters who are from Italian roots as well, European roots. Like, that's how I learned it's the same thing there. Because I always think of American wedding, like, they got me an effing $50 gift, you cheap bastard. Like, I'm giving people $500 gifts when I go to wedding, and it's cash. We never give physical gifts, we give straight cash. So go on.
So Connor says, that's what the standard is. My wife and I, we always give a little bit more than what we think it costs per plate. And he holds up, he's like, the Orr Premium Wedding Gift, you've got this in the hole. Then he says, if you really believe The Jags are better than the Niners. Let's bet on it. At the end of the season, we'll do our final power rankings at the end of the regular season. And if, as a group, we put the Jags above the Niners, you get the put your ass in the jackpot wedding gift, which is above the Or premium wedding gift. If, however, we finish with the Niners above the Jags, then you get the Or boring wedding gift, right? Well, at the end of the season, we went months. We forgot about this. We all continued to power rank completely objectively and unbiasedly. And in our final regular season power rankings, all four of us had the Jags above the Niners. So I won the bet. I won the ass in the jackpot gift above the Or premium gift. Not even thinking about the boring gift. And Or came through. I'm not going to reveal the specifics here, but I will tell you that Connor, very generous man, him and his wife, had a great time at the wedding with them, and he came through with a put your ass in the jackpot level gift. It was cash, and it was a good gift, and I really appreciate it. And Connor will be receiving a thank you note from me and Jessica.
I love to hear it. That's just the standard of these weddings now, especially here. Like, I know someone gets married here. They spent $60,000 to $100,000 on the wedding. Bare minute is really what it costs to get married here, essentially, and meet everyone's expectations. But that was a great question. Hey, Mello, my wife and I are getting remarried. You are invited. If I don't love you, maybe 400, but that's true. Like, bare minute, like $400 to $500 is what we put in envelopes here because you kind of feel like you have to. I start a couple other comments I wanted to quickly get to. You guys already acknowledged we did, Ray School. If you go back and watch the part of the stream that you missed, we did talk about Salah saying that the starters are going to play every preseason game. Selfish of me to answer this question too. Yes, Hannah, I do think the Leafs have to draft Gavin McKenna, number one overall. We're very lucky to have that pick. I'm not buying the trade the pick, take the Swedish kid. No, take Gavin McKenna, number one overall. Put him on a line with Matthews right away and watch them thrive.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to just about do it. There was a whole, Justin, I got to catch you up, Justin, because we talked the other day, we played the clip from Heed the Call when we did our QB confidence tiers. Well, I have since been more or less harassing Connor on Twitter every time I see anything pro Cam Ward out there, or even if I post it myself, like the Derek Carr clip I posted on Twitter and tagged Connor in it from the Heed the Call account. Just like, hey, Connor, don't. I think the Heed the Call one was, don't let Connor Orr see this. I replied to the Sleeper Titans account who put out the list that Mina Kimes and Ben Solak came up with together that had Dart above Shook and, or sorry, had Ward above Shook and Dart, which was my whole argument is that they should be viewed on a level playing field. And replied to Connor and said, like, hey, Connor, does this change your opinion? There was the OTA rep of Cam throwing that I think like even like Dove tweeted and it was like, Cam Ward looks amazing at OTAs. And it's like one simple slant route against air. And I replied to that one and tagged Connor. I said, Connor, does this one OTA rep change your mind? Like, I've been all over it. I've been on his ass, Justin. And it came up on yesterday's Heed the Call. We had to do an HR meeting about my harassment of my coworkers. So I have to stop tagging Connor in tweets about Cam Ward. But I will not rest until Connor admits that Cam Ward is at least on the same playing field as Tyler Shook and Jackson Dart going into this season. And that by the end of this season, let's be real, we're all Titans fans here. We can say what we really think. Cam Ward's going to be viewed far and away as the best quarterback of his draft class. And also, can we just talk objectively? Like, Netflix could have picked anybody. They picked Cam to put on their show, right? They didn't pick Jackson Dart, despite him being in a New York market. They didn't pick Tyler Shook, despite him getting coached by Kellen Moore, who's a great coach. Now Cam Ward under Brian Daboll. I'm not even worried. I'll be proven right eventually, Justin.
I'm not worried. I empower you to continue harassing them until they admit their take was wrong. I think that's going to do it for today's very special 83-84 minute live stream of the Music City Audible podcast. You guys, so much fun to be back. We had a blast with you. You really came through with the support, the comments, the likes, the amount of people we had in here, obviously the generous super chat tips. Thank you so much for supporting this show. This one's going to do well over the weekend. I think a couple of you guys are going to go back and rewatch it. You join in the stream late. I think we had a really, really good end. This was the end silliness of the show. We had some really good analysis of everything that happened at OTAs. Go back and watch the first hour, I would say, if you missed it. Until Monday, when we're back, talking about probably the Tennessee Titans. Y'all stay safe. Y'all have a great Memorial Day weekend. See, I know it's Memorial Day, even though it's not for me. We got to talk off air. That's okay. We don't got to do that. I knew what you were going to do, and we don't got to do it right now. We will talk off air about what the plan is, but we'll be
back. We might be back Tuesday, folks. So make sure you're subscribed and have channel notifications turned on so you know as soon as we are back.
Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.